This is MetaDama, a holistic view on data management in the Nordics. Welcome, my name is Winfried and thanks for joining me for this episode of MetaDama. Our vision is to promote data management as a profession in the Nordics, show the competencies that we have, and that is the reason I invite Nordic experts in data and information management for a talk. Welcome to the show. Today I have with me Aidan Minar, and this is going to be our first show in English, and I'm really excited about that. And in addition to having a great speaker with us, we also have a really interesting topic, which is data and culture. And I've done some work on the data culture field, trying to go a bit away from the classic PPT model, people, process, technology, but rather talk about technology, organizations, and culture, because culture is much more than just people. There is a huge difference between the culture inside an organization and outside an organization. And that is the topic of today. So, Aidan, welcome on the show.
Yeah, Winifred, I have to say, I'm really excited about this interview, and I really, really am very happy that you invited me. It's going to be fun talking with you.
Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself, where you work, where you are from, how do you get involved with the whole field of data?
Absolutely. I can give you a short overview of my life. How did I get involved in data is probably a good starting point. I started my academic training as an engineering mathematician. And as an engineer, and particularly in mathematics, it's all about modeling and predicting real-world outcomes. So I think my passion and energy for this really started way back when I was doing my degree in engineering mathematics, as I was describing, all about data and modeling. So it's very, very something that I really latched onto, and I've continued through my professional career. And I think, you know, maybe that's a good segue to where I've worked. I've actually been very lucky, I feel, for having worked in many countries around the world, in many different cities, to experience these different cultures that you just talked about. I've worked in London and Amsterdam. I've worked for a couple of years in China, in Hong Kong. In the US, I've worked in Hawaii, of all places, which I'll probably touch on later, California. And now, very happy that I'm in the Nordics and experience the Nordic culture in Norway. Maybe a fun fact is, actually, I'm a qualified electrician, which I think is quite interesting on its own, because maybe it's a bit synonymous with data, right? You can't see it. It's very important. It's actually very dangerous if you don't know what you're doing with it, right? And maybe a personal introduction about where I was actually born in Uganda, in East Africa, which I think set probably some very important principles for me and how I think and act. You know, the African culture is a very welcoming culture, very open to learning and very friendly, super engaging. It's just been a wonderful beginning of my life when I was up to the age of 6. And I think that's probably a good introduction of who I am. Hopefully that's enough for you.
Fantastic. Now you started to work in the Nordics and you are working for DNB. And I hope I get your work title completely right, but you are the EVP of the Group Digital Insights and the Chief Data Analytics Officer.
It's a very grand title, but yes, that's correct.
So how does the work with data differ in the Nordics? Do you see any difference in how the Norwegian culture is set up? Do you see any difference in how we use data or how open we are about data and about sharing about ourselves? Just give me a bit of an insight on how you see Norway in a nutshell.
Yeah, this is actually a fascinating question for me. Can I answer the question after I just give some context? I think the context is important because it sets the scene for why I think the cultures are very different. There's actually a really good HBR study, a Harvard Business Review study, that talks about corporate cultures. And I think it's actually a very good frame. It basically maps corporate cultures against XY axis. The X axis is independence versus interdependence, and on the y-axis it talks about flexible versus stable. And I think these are actually very powerful ways for you to assess how different corporate cultures look at things like data and anything in relation to change. And I think if you look at Norway, for example, to answer your question now, the Norwegian culture seems to enjoy stability. It's kind of, it's not hungry to take risk, if I can say that. They like things to be structured and organized and safe. So they're sitting on the stable part of the y-axis. And they like interdependence. I think they love to feel that everyone's involved in everything. So it's a very consensus-oriented culture. And I think the interesting thing that it draws out when you think about this is you end up with two very paradoxical cultures. You have the learning and purpose culture, which is a culture that likes to make mistakes, has a goal, but likes to go on to start and go and learn from their mistakes on that journey, versus a much more authoritative, safe culture, which is someone above me is going to tell me what to do and we're going to have lots of processes and controls. So again, the bottom line when it comes to Norway, my experience has been, it's actually interesting. I think it's a mix of all of these, actually. I think the culture I've experienced is very open and willing to learn, but also wanting to make sure that there's a lot of process and control there and that everybody's coming along on that journey together. I think that would be the bottom line for Norway. Did that answer your question? It's a long-winded answer.
That is a good answer, and I enjoyed that because I'm not Norwegian myself, so I've been living in Norway for 13 years now. I'm originally from Germany. The cultures are really similar, but then again different. And
yes.
In Germany, it is, just an example, it is really important to have that personal privacy. So if you, for example, have a look at Google Street View and zoom out to see the entire map of Europe, you're going to see a bit of a lack of Street View options in Germany compared to other countries. So that's an interesting part.
It is. Can I just build on what you're saying? Because maybe I didn't answer your question, because I think this is a very interesting point. You're talking about privacy rights. In effect, right? I mean, the Nordic culture is extremely digitized. I mean, a highly digitized society. So I think you're bringing up a very interesting topic about customer privacy rights.
Exactly. When we're talking about data and data transformation and the role of CDO, it comes to privacy rights, it comes to how we use data. I think, and let me just try to argue this through, the role of the CDO is the role of a change manager.
Absolutely. Sorry, I'm interrupting you, but I think you're spot on with that one.
But at the same time, I think all leadership is change management, in effect. So what I was wondering about is if the lack of knowledge and data maturity in some companies leads to the role of CDO becoming more of a change management role than an actual data role. And then again, is culture a factor that is of the same magnitude as maturity and knowledge? Or is culture a precondition for forming that basis for change?
Oh, this is getting quite deep now, isn't it? maybe to try and put some reality behind this. You know, when I was interviewed for this role at DNB, when I eventually was selected and I joined, I always asked, why did you pick me? What is it that was the differentiator for you? And, you know, the answer they gave was actually they were more interested in my change management skills, to be frank. So I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, when you're driving a data transformation agenda, it's got the word transformation, it has to be underpinned. It must be underpinned by someone that can actually shift the culture, shift the way that people think and act, particularly when it comes to a topic like data, that people actually aren't aware of the art of the possible, right? You've got to figure out how you can connect with people and show them the art of the possible and what you can do with data to solve business problems. So I think, again, I think to answer your bottom line here on your question, I think if you're doing any level of transformation, and I think data transformations are the hot topic of today, it has to be someone that's a change agent. Has to be, if you're going to be successful.
So, and naturally, if we're talking about digital transformation and we talk about creating data-driven organizations, that role will fall to the CDO.
Yeah, this is also a very interesting question because often, you know, we use this CDO title, just the acronym, and often people think that I'm a chief digital officer. And I hate to say it, but I kind of get a bit offended by that, if I can be honest. Because, I mean, I think we've moved beyond digital now. We've got to go to the information role. You know, when you talk about chief digital officers, they tend to talk about digitizing processes. They're talking about developing application solutions that are straight through processes. And my experience so far, I've not really met one chief digital officer, if I can be frank, and it's based on fact that I've experienced, who really understands data and information architecture. And that actually is a foundation for becoming digitized. So I think it has to be data at the core of going digital is what I'm trying to say here. You have to go down to the data and analytics layer.
If we compare the CDO role to the other roles on the board, on the C-suite, you have finance, you maybe have operations, IT. Those are all assets per definition. Oh. And we're talking about data as an asset as well. Would you argue that digital becomes a bit too high level because digital is not falling into that asset category?
That's a very good way to present it, actually. Yes, I've not heard it presented that way, but data is the new asset, if I can be. They talk about data being the new oil, right? So I would probably reframe it, though, slightly, just to reflect on your question in real time. I think maybe roles are maturing. You know, you used to have the chief technology officer, right? And I think technology's become quite commoditized and scalable with all these new advanced technologies that are coming in cloud-based solutions. So I think technology has kind of become more commoditized and less important. Then we moved into the, as you described it, the chief digital officer role, which is all about digitizing. And I think that's also starting to fall away because these application capabilities you can deploy into cloud in near real time, it's just astonishing what you can do with the new technologies. That's also kind of becoming a little bit easier. Now it's kind of coming to the chief data officer role or chief information officer role. And I often talk about injecting more eye into IT because they tend to be very tech focused. We need a lot more information when it comes to digital or technology today. And my last comment would be is actually where are we maturing into? And I think it's going to be AI, right? Are we going to have a chief AI officer coming up very soon?
Fantastic. Talk about the CDO role. But to get back to the data culture and how to foster a data culture in a company, what differences do you see on the cultures in the different places you worked, different countries? How do people connect with data?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting. I mean, I talked about the Harvard Business Review framework. And I think maybe just to map it back to that, when you're talking about a culture that has learning and purpose is the most important principles in its organization, you know, that's kind of much more like the Googles and the big tech, right? They want to learn by failing and you know, fail fast, learn fast. It supports agile ways of working. And they experiment. So I think that culture is very different to the authority and safety culture, which they highlight, which is much more directive and process-oriented, and they're much slower. They want to make sure they're compliant with everything. They don't want to fail. They want to do it right the first time. So I think if you use that as a framework, the cultures that I've experienced so far, they have very different approaches. You know, you either have, if you're learning and have purpose, which is hopefully the purpose is to improve the customer experience, which is number one, you know, the people are learning and trying to figure out how they can apply these new data-driven technologies to actually drive more business value or customer value. And then on the counter side, you have some cultures that are, they get that, but they're quite reluctant to move forward because there's a lot of regulations around this, right? So they find reasons how or why they can't do that, right? You know, GDPR is a great example. You know, the General Data Protection Regulation. There are a lot of restrictions there, but it's a mindset, right? If you're using the regulation, and it is best practice in my opinion, people should reframe regulations as best practice. But it shouldn't be, it's not there to stop you from using data to add value. It's just making sure that when you are using it, that you're using it for the right reason, which is to add value to the customer, not to kind of exploit the customer, right? So I think those two aspects are very important when you think about how data is being used in organizations. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. And I wanted to continue on that thought, company and data culture. Because I think there's a difference between company values and company culture and data culture. But it doesn't have to be, and it shouldn't be. One example that I worked with is mapping company values to data values and where data can provide something more to the company values. And if you just talk digitalization, you just talk technology, there's only one common company value that you can choose to do that, and that's innovation.
Oh.
But if you think of data and data as an asset for the company, you can map that to each and every one of those company values. You can map it to integrity. You can map it to boldness. You can map that to innovation as well. So how can we make, how would you think we can make data culture a part of our company culture?
You're asking me some very good questions, actually. You're really making me think, Winfried. So again, I'll try and make it real. I mean, DNB has three corporate values, right? One is curiosity, or being curious. And that's about learning about the art of the possible. Let me just outline those, and then I'll see if I can answer your question when it comes to data. They have boldness as their second one, which is challenging the status quo. And the last one is being responsible, which is clearly very important. It's all about, you know, environmental and social responsibilities and data privacy, just doing the right thing, basically. So when you're talking about bringing data culture into the corporate culture, I think they have to be intrinsically linked. It should start with the corporate principles, right? And I think those principles have to start at the top, right? So everything starts at the top when it comes to culture. That, you know, the group exec or the board members, they have to set the standard of what's required. We have to make sure that we're sharing and learning what's possible when it comes to data, you know, creating communities, learning the art of the possible, being curious, as we described, challenging the status quo by being bold. You know, I think these have to be, they have to be intrinsically connected, to your point. They have to be one and the same in a way, right?
And that's where I see the big difference, because often when we talk about data and we talk about analytics, it is kind of understood as part of the IT world. The IT world has never been connected to those values.
Oh, that's a very interesting one, because I often get asked this question: if you could go back and do something again after your first 3-year transformation journey, because we are now on the second 3-year journey at DNB on data and analytics. But you know, what was your biggest challenge? And I, when I reflected back, I found it quite extraordinary when I said it. It's actually technology. IT was the biggest challenge, which I found, I always find quite a bit confusing for me, actually. You'd think that they would understand it. I mean, they have the word information in their organizational name. But what I found is that they're very technology focused. They're not information focused. They're application focused. And actually, here's a good definition of why I think they need to pivot from application to information and data. What is the purpose of an application, right? An application is a functional tool that allows you to capture, store, and represent information to the user, right? That's all it does. You know, applications are really secondary to actually the underlying core, which is data and analytics. That is really the fuel for what goes into an application. So reframing IT to be more, or injecting more I into IT, is really important, in my opinion. That's one of the biggest learning points I will share in this podcast.
And now we moved kind of naturally into a micro level. So we moved into internal tribes in a company.
Yep.
Apart from the IT part, and I think we're going to talk a bit more about that later on, are there any differences in the cultures inside an organization when it comes to data?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, again, I can only share from the many painful experiences of doing data transformation projects or programs. You know, corporate culture is just, it's a mix of tribes, to your point. You know, there are internal tribes across the organization. They all think and act differently. And you need to, when you're doing this transformation across the bank, and actually that's the challenge, right? You know, if you're doing it in a silo, it's probably relatively easy because you're dealing with one culture, one way of thinking and acting. But when you're trying to align agendas across multiple silos with different ways of thinking and acting, and you do need to create a shared agenda. You can't go in with a directive, we're going to do something. Of course, that would be easier, but you're going to end up having a fight with those tribes that don't agree, right? So making sure that you understand each of these individual tribes, and I'll get to answer your question in a minute, because my experience so far is that you have a business tribe who are very focused on making sure that solutions are oriented to solving true business problems, right? Then you actually have the information technology tribe, which are very focused on, in my opinion so far, very focused on technology and application and operational resilience to make sure that solutions are always up and running. And then you have probably the third tribe, which is compliance and control, which are making sure that you're not doing something that's going to breach some regulation and incur a significant fine. But aligning those tribes is very difficult. You're spinning plates when it, because they're almost diametrically competing with each other. So it's not easy. It's a real challenge, to be honest.
Do you see any opportunities in that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's very important. It's another good question. It's very important that you do have these different opinions brought to the table to make sure you come up with a resilient answer. Actually, here's always a good thing. You normally have a hypothesis, right? You have, what do they say? It's hypothesis, antithesis, so the anti-hypothesis of what you're thinking. Then you have to synthesize something from those two points of view. So having these three very different points of view on the same, lensing on the same issue is very important, but you've got to be very smart at figuring out how you can try and align them or find a common interest. And that's always the challenge when you're doing change, I think, common interests.
I do have to agree on that. Coming back to the IT part, and IT plays an important role in business, no doubt about that. But how does the business think about IT? And how does IT think about the business when it comes to data? Because I have the feeling that the business is thinking that, well, IT should have the responsibility for the information. Sure. How does the business think about IT, and how does IT think about IT when it comes to data?
Yeah. This is, again, one of the, I think, the biggest learning points that I've been through. Yeah. So I think when it comes to business on IT, I think it's a very interesting observation that I've seen consistently. And I always look at them very quizzically when they say it, because I'm trying to understand why, what their thinking is. But the business most definitely think that IT owns data. And that to me is most definitely not correct. You know, IT does not own the data. They may steward data through digital processes, but they do not own it. And that's a very important data governance topic, which is one of the biggest challenges in any data transformation I've done, is reframing the business to understand that they have a significant responsibility and accountability to ensure the quality of the data that they originate. That's really key. And when it comes to IT on IT, I think we've touched on this topic, is reframing their mindset from thinking about applications and digitization solutions to actually thinking about information architecture and data is actually the most important thing. Because from my experience, what I've seen is, you know, most banks in particular have a lot of technical debt that they've built over many decades. And that technical debt is actually built up from poor architecture. You know, they should be starting to reframe and look at data value chains that flow through digital processes and figuring out how they can make them more lean, more efficient, and actually make sure that they are sustained and have data integrity in those data value chains. And a good example would be anti-money laundering, for example, for financial services. That's a very important, very complex data value chain, and the integrity is of that data value chain is really important.
So, and this is maybe a bit of a hard question to answer, but I'm going for it anyways. Do you think, and I will explain a bit more later on the question, do you think data is too far from where the value of that data is perceived to be generated? So are we generating our insights? Are we generating our analytics? Are we working with our data quality kind of in a bubble that's too far away from where we actually can receive any value from it?
That's, again, a very good question. I think I can only share my experiences and give you an opinion on my experiences, but most definitely, yes. I mean, in the transformations that I've been working on in my career, I like matrix models, to be honest. You know, we always switch organizationally from centralized to fully decentralized. And I think it has to be a happy mix of centralized and decentralized. And that's where the matrix model comes in. And the reason why I like matrix models, for example, when it comes to, for example, the Chief Digital Analytics Officer function, the function I've created within DNB, is we actually have a relatively thin central team that sets priorities and standards and ways of working. So like the curbs, if you can call it, of the road. But the technical execution, the advanced data scientists and analytics users, and also the data governance and the data stewards individuals sit within the business. But, and here's the interesting thing I observe, even if you put them in the business area, they're actually still not working directly with the business. You know, within the silo, you have business, and then within the business area, they have data and analytics, but they're still not working
side by side with the business. So you still have that disintermediation, right? So it's always a challenge to figure out how do you actually get someone with data and analytics experience working directly with a relationship manager in the business. That's really hard to do.
No, we had a fantastic journey. We started out with talking about the macro level, talking about different cultures in different countries. We talked about different cultures on an organizational level. We talked about different tribes. But to get even more granular, I have always the feeling that data management is kind of perceived as a service for BI and analytics. Mm. And BI and analytics is a service to the business. So are we looking at a chain of causation or a chain of service?
Yeah, and that's where the problem occurs, because the longer these chains become, the more separated from the business problem you become, right? And, you know, one of the things that I think does work well as a lesson learned is actually to rotate people who are technicians, like data engineers or data scientists or data stewards, whoever they might, or technologists. Rotate them into the business to work with relationship managers and see that the problems that they're dealing with directly, you know, visually be with them or hear or understand and see them with their own eyes. So actually they can take those problems away back into their technology areas or data areas and figure out solutions where they can apply data and analytics or technologies to solve them. So I don't know if that's what you're trying to say here, but I think what I'm understanding is how do we bridge the gap from technology and data analytics solutions to actually solve real-world business problems. And you always have this gap.
Right, and I have seen so many dashboards and Power BI dashboards or Tableau dashboards where we try to put some effort into visualizing the data that we have, gain some insights from it, and then those insights will not be used by anyone.
What a waste of energy, right? And also it's demoralizing in a way as well.
So if you bring the business in right at the start and keep it on the same level, we are much faster and more agile in our approach.
And can I add something there, Winifred? Because I think this is a very interesting point. I mean, this is about agile ways of working, right? Which is what most organizations are trying to replicate, that Google and Amazon have been doing for many decades, and Facebook. But when you actually bring together these different subject matter experts from business to data and technology together in one room, it's actually much more fun, right? You learn off each other. Isn't that the most enjoyable thing in life, when you're learning off each other? It just makes it, and also to your point, once you've delivered something, not only have you learned off something, but actually it's something that they'll use and adopt and actually feel thankful that it's there, right?
And I think learning is the key term, not just for this session we had today, for the work we are doing, but also for the entire podcast. Yeah. And under the learning umbrella, how would you sum up what we talked about today?
The learning umbrella. What do we learn from this conversation? My lessons learned, maybe.
Mm.
Oh gosh. Lessons learned. Okay. And I think they're great questions, by the way, Winifred. So let me reflect back. I think lesson number one, recognize and acknowledge that culture underpins any transformation journey that you're doing, particularly when it comes to a technical topic like data. That's number one. Second lesson learned is that driving that cultural transformation, changing the way that people think and act, has to start at the top. Has to. Must. And I'm talking like board level or, you know, executive level. They have to have this understanding of the importance, and they actually have data literacy at top of mind. They need to learn and understand why data is so important to their business when it comes to a digital economy that they're working within today. And lesson number three would be how, and I think you touched on it nicely, how do you bring together different subject matter experts, starting with the business problem? That is probably the biggest lesson learned. You must start with a clearly defined business problem and bring a mixed group of subject matter experts together to solve that business problem together, learn off each other, and bottom line, actually deliver something that's actually going to add value to your outside customer. I think they would be my three lessons learned.
So that there's a lot of talk, and I'm not going to go into that topic now. There's a lot of talk about data as a product. But I think problem solving as a product would be a way better term to it.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very good way of thinking about it. Yeah, we need to, and that's what, and let's be frank, that's what Google and the big tech firms in America have been doing for a number of decades. They got really good at problem solving, right?
Not just solving, but also finding the problems to solve.
Yes, actually, that's another good point you're raising. I always say to individuals that I engage with when talking about problems, actually defining the problem clearly enough is actually half of the way to the solution. Often we start with a problem statement that no one really understands, and that's not going to give you a good outcome, right?
Exactly. So thank you so much for the talk. That was a great talk, and I think there's so much more to talk about, so many more topics to discuss. And I hope we can do another session later on.
Yeah, Winifred, I have to give you credit. It's a great set of questions, like you said, going from this big global perspective like the planet down to internal corporate tribes down to the detail. I really enjoyed it. It's been fantastic. It's a great conversation. Thank you.